You know, so as we're coming out of the meditation, just talking about the simplicity being available to us all at all of the time. The breath, as I said, is with us until it's not. So this is the part where I get to share a little bit about, or a little more about, the practice of simplicity, or nekkhama, the Pali word nekkhamma, I believe. And, you know, just going back to the practice we just did, reminding ourselves that the practice can be as simple as being still and following the breath, and that that can be available to us in our everyday lives. Standing in line, you can go, am I breathing? And no one has to know. We may not do it like we're going to do it, you know, in a meditation. We may not be in the grocery store going or something, but we can stand there with our eyes open and we can simply go, okay, are my feet on the ground? Do I feel myself? You know, if you're in a wheelchair, or are you seated? Can you feel it? Whatever it is that you're ambulating through the world, however you're ambulating, when you're in stillness and perhaps waiting for something, are you breathing? Are you connected to the earth? And are you breathing? And how is your breath? And that's the mobile, that's the practice on the go. So for some of you, we may forget that the practice can be simple. I know that I do. I get, you know, I can get caught up in thinking about all the different things, all the different mindfulness practices. And then nowadays with everything, you know, lots of things on Zoom, there's so many this and that and sanghas and hear this talk, do this meditation, join this group, get this app. And it's still meditation, right? And that's great. But sometimes I find myself getting caught up in actually all of that. And then I find myself, I'm no longer really practicing in a way that's benefiting me. So again, this evening, I'm going to talk about simplicity and how, pretty much how, why I have made that a part of my practice and part of my life for the last few years. And so going back to just a little bit of explanation about the about nekkhama, it's one of the 10 paramis, which are known as the 10 perfections, which are 10 qualities that practitioners, after the Buddha passed away, years after he had died, some of the I guess practitioners, I don't know if they were monks or bhikkhunis or anything like that, I'm not sure, but they were practitioners later that said, you know, the Buddha had these qualities and nekkhama is one of them. The first one, there are 10. The first one is dana, generosity, and service. The second one was sila, or ethical being, ethical behavior, or harmlessness falls in there as well. And these are just one interpretation that I'm reading from. Nekkhama, renunciation is usually how it's translated, or release, and I like to add simplicity. Panya, or wisdom and understanding. Virya, courage or energy. Kanti, patience and endurance. Sakka, or satya, truth and honesty. Metta, kindness and gentleness. Adhittana, resolve or determination. And Pekka, balance and non-reactivity. And so, you know, oftentimes this practice is misunderstood. Renunciation seeming as a way of having to give things up initially, you know. I have chosen to really follow this practice because I have wanted to simplify my life for years. This busy, busy life. I've wanted to simplify it for years. I find myself, I'm going to put myself on the gallery view so I can see people and not talk to myself. I've wanted to simplify my life for years. It's like, how can I simplify it? I mean, in one, I wanted to get off the treadmill is how I felt. You know, that's actually how I began my meditation practice, or not my meditation practice, but my retreat practice, my formal Dharma practice. My brother actually introduced me, my older brother, John, and he was like, he told me he had gone on this retreat at Spirit Rock, and you know, they were in silence, and you do this, you do that. He said, do you think you could do that? I was like, oh yeah, absolutely. So I went on my first retreat, and I really felt like I got off that treadmill for that moment. And so from that moment, I was interested in, like, how can I get this, not just when I'm on retreat, but in my life when I'm at home? You know, how can I get this sense of stillness, this sense of quiet, despite what's happening in life? So fast forward many years later, you know, probably about, I don't know how many years later into my Dharma practice, number one, I fell in love with the Dharma. And so I continued to practice and go on retreat. And but anyway, years later, I'm, you know, in the Dharma, and we had to study these paramis. We had to pick one that we felt drawn to. And so we had to study them all and pick one. And I leaned into renunciation. I'm going to back up a little bit before that. I was also drawn to the simplicity during my practice and going on different retreats and talking to, seeing different teachers and attending retreats where either monastics attended and taught, or either attending actual retreats led by monastics. And my background, I spent 5 years at Spirit Rock as a retreat manager pre-COVID. And actually, that's how I met James. You know, I was a new retreat manager, and I met James Barras. Yeah, and I'm smiling because it was a great story and great joy. You know, his awakening joy stuff. He brought joy to my life just by meeting him. And so anyway, that's a whole nother story that I could tell. But I was exposed to lots of different teachers and lots of different styles. And so I had an opportunity while I was either working as a retreat manager or also retreating to sit with many people, and some of those were the monastics. And I was so drawn to the nuns, to the simple, so to speak. You know, the wearing the same thing all the time, not having to think about what they were wearing, not having to think about what they were eating, not have to think about what they were cooking. And this is not what I didn't think. This was my interpretation, looking on the outside in. I could have peace forever if you have their practice. And so I had in mind that I still would love one day to go and stay at a monastery and ordain temporarily, just to get that experience, just to have that experience. And so I have not been able to carve that time out and opportunity just yet in my life. So what I decided to do, how I could get a taste of that formal practice, as a lay person. And so I talked to, in my talk, you know, we'll have time for discussion. It's like one day I said, oh, I want to do this as a lay person. You know, it really began with years of trying to simplify my life personally. Like, let me think. I used to do a number of different jobs. So I was like, wait, can I just focus on one or two? Can I slow down the pace of my life? You know, all this busyness and shopping and what am I going to wear, and just, you know, the routine of it all, and the, you know, getting caught up in so many different things. And so it took a while for me to actually figure out, okay, Ramona, you can't go to a monastery right now because the timing's not working out. So much was happening in my life. However, what I could do was take on the practice formally. I had done when I was retreat, I've done things like take or 5 precepts where you really simplify. Well, we all take simplicity happening on. So I got a what I finally did 2 years ago, about 2 years ago or so, was talk to a nun, Aya Ananda Bodhi from Alokavahara Monastery. She's one of my favorite teachers and nuns, bhikkhunis. And I told her about my interest in wanting to study more closely with the nuns and doing renunciate practice, but I wasn't ready to go to the monastery. We figured that out. It just wasn't going to work out for time, and I wasn't ready for like a year, and only have a couple of weeks of visits. Because once I started asking, I was like, oh. But my parents were older at the time, and so they were. I was dealing with them dying actually at different times. So it just wasn't the time. My daughter was in college. It just wasn't the time for me to do that. Or she might have been just coming. She was done with college at one point. It just wasn't the right time in my life. So what I decided to do with the help of Aya Ananda Bodhi, she said, Ramona, it sounds like you might want to take the Upasaka vows. And I'm like, well, what is that? And some of you may know, but it was like, it's when you take the eight precepts, but you live as a lay person. And you take the eight precepts with a preceptor. And Aya Ananda Bodhi agreed to be my preceptor and guide me through my practice as a lay person at home with these precepts. And so, what it means, the purpose of taking formal ordination, I'm reading from something that I found when I was studying because I wanted to know what I was doing. And it says, the purpose of taking formal ordination as an upasaka or upasika, one is masculine, one is feminine, is to strengthen one's commitment and to declare that commitment openly to the community. It should never be taken lightly. A person's reasons for requesting this ordination need to be considered carefully. And so I did that. I reflected a lot and said, you know what? I want to do this. I was headed to the Forest Refuge at Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts, out that way for a month. And I said this would be a great time for me to take these vows, and then from then on, I will continue to follow the vows in my lay life. So we had to also think about, this meant that, and for me, by then I understand, I thought, it wasn't really giving up for me. For me, it was like simplification. If I didn't have to think about what I was going to wear, if I could, focus on really practicing every day, making everything a mindful practice, I'll read the precepts so that you get an idea of what I was, undertaking. But let me get back to we had to figure out what I was going to wear, right? And so we figured that I had some options. I could wear black pants and a white top, something that I was going to wear every day all the time. And I was like, eh, I don't want to do that because as a person that looks like me, somebody of black African descent, in our society where we deal with a lot of racism, people already think I'm the help. So no, I'm not gonna walk around with black pants and a white shirt. So I and nobody got to said, okay, Ramona, it's okay. Yep, we don't want to cause you to have any more harm. Then she said, maybe you could wear white, because that's what some of the nuns that are practicing or the nuns that are thinking about becoming a nun really in the monastery they wear. And different traditions have different things. And so I was like, she said, but that's not really practical. And I said, yeah, no, with me, absolutely not. I usually don't even have white in my wardrobe because I'm messy. I spill stuff. It's going to be a mess. And I'm walking around the city. People are going to be looking at me. It's just not going to work. So then she said, well, there's also brown. And so I really went home and thought about all this stuff. I reflected on it to think what would be practical, what would make sense, what would be most comfortable for me. And I said, okay, I could do brown kind of with the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition. When we just lost. I said, I'll do the brown. And she's like, okay. So I went and bought everything brown. I still had to shop. So already the practice was beginning because it's simplicity. And I'm getting caught up in, oh, what pants, what shirt, how am I going to do? I finally decided like brown yoga pants, brown top, brown socks, brown wraps, just brown. And I also went to the secondhand store because, again, I was, it was easy to watch the mind because I'm going into simplicity and yet the mind is getting caught up on Amazon shopping for my brown outfits. It's like, oh. And that was the key. That was one of the reasons I was practicing so that I could begin to see what's important, what's necessary, and what's not. Where I cause myself extra suffering because of my greed and attachment and wanting and desire, and versus what's really, really necessary. I'll say that again. So we settled on the brown, and I took the precepts with her. And these are what I agreed to. The first precept was to undertake the training to refrain from harming any living being. Then I said I wanted to, I agreed to undertake the training to refrain from taking what has not been offered. And then I personally decided that I would undertake the training to refrain from sexual activity, to be celibate. Often on retreat, that one is to refrain from, refrain from sexual activity on retreat. But another option is to restrain from taking or from having sexual activity that causes harm. But I chose to go the celibate route. I was already celibate, so it wasn't a big deal for me. And then it was, I undertake the training to refrain from false speech. I undertake the training to abstain from using substances that cloud the mind and heart. I undertake the training to refrain from taking food at inappropriate times. What's inappropriate? Well, eating after the noon hour or the 1 o'clock hour. I undertake the training to refrain from dancing, singing, music, and unseemly shows, from the use of garlands, perfumes, unguents, from things that tend to beautify and adorn the body. And then I undertake the training to refrain from the use of high and luxurious seats and beds. And this was all so that the last phrase says, may my conduct conduce to attainment of the highest fruits of liberation. So at first glance, these things seem restrictive. They seemed restrictive to me according to my lifestyle, but I was ready to train in this way, to practice. And the guidance around the practice, not only was it that there was a training, but the really thing is to it simplifies life so that you can really see what's there. And they served as a guide when I needed to make decisions or there were discernment. But it was really so that I could deepen my practice. Not that I wanted to live this way forever, but to deepen my practice, to really let go. And I took the vows, and I went on my month-long retreat at the Forest Refuge. And I said these vows every day in Pali and reflected on them every day in English in the support of the Forest Refuge. I told my teachers there that I had undertaken these vows. All I brought was my brown garb. We had agreed that I could eat a little bit after a certain time in the evening because of the time change, and also because, you know, I get low blood sugar, so I need some protein later. So we had some, I could have some things later in the day if I needed them. So, and I'm not sure if all of you are familiar with Forest Refuge, but you're pretty much doing a self retreat. You might have two Dharma talks a week, and you basically sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk, eat, sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk, do your yogi job, sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk, eat, all by yourself. And well, you're sitting in community, but you set your own schedule and the whole thing, so you know there are other people in the hall. 30 days. Oh my goodness. It wasn't so simple. The simplicity did not arise right away. I was excited at first. I was excited that all I had to do was wear brown. You know, I didn't have to think about what I was going to wear. I didn't have to think about anything. All I had to think about was, is it a hot day or a cold day? Do I need a jacket or not? But the mind begins to do what it does to want. You know, I began to think about, well, which brown socks, which brown pants, which brown shirt? Oh, I don't like this one. This one doesn't feel good. That one doesn't. And I got to see right there in my mind that it really didn't matter what I was wearing. The mind really does its own thing, and we get caught up in it and cause our own suffering. How could I be? You know, I just saw myself creating. I was really stressed out, wondering what shirt to wear. They were all brown, long sleeve, short sleeve, V-neck, scoop neck. Oh my goodness. And so eventually I got to see that and practice with that and say, okay, Ramona, it doesn't matter. Go back to, is it a warm day or a cool day? Is it clean? And pick a brown outfit. And then I only had a few, so I had to do the laundry often. Then eventually, I had a day, you know, I'm sticking to the brown outfit. I had a day where I woke up, I was bored. So I was crying because all I had was brown. Why did I only bring my brown stuff? Why did... Seeing the mind again. You know, I wanted to simplify my life. I took these steps, I took these vows. And my mind is still basically tripping out. It's like, oh my gosh, here you are, you're crying because you don't want to wear brown anymore. That doesn't make any sense. But what happens when you go back to your regular life? When I go back to my regular life, I start to see that the wanting comes from I'm trying to satisfy something else. It has nothing really to do with the brown. It's me wanting something new, a new experience, excitement. But what is that? It's insatiable. And that's where the Buddha talks about there's an unsatisfactory nature to our lives, that external things are not going to satisfy. And as I began to realize that and began to not have to worry about which brown shirt, which brown pants, as long as I was warm or cool enough, I was able to open my mind a little bit more to reflect on other things that were causing me suffering from my wanting something externally and not paying attention to what was happening internally, or even not seeing what was already there. Seeing the beautiful nature outside, really seeing it, really looking at it, because that brown was just gonna stay brown. And so I did it for 30 days. I made it through. The eating was fine. That wasn't that difficult, you know. You know, the food was prepared, that was good. I actually got into a routine, and I had a pretty good practice. But the challenge for me was when I came home. And I was trying to stay on these vows and talk to my family about having taken them and having to change my lifestyle in a way that I started to realize there were things that I did out of routine and out of habit. And one of the things, going back to all the vows, like refraining from harming any living being was good, but the one deep reflection that I had on that included myself. So, that was one of the lessons I learned there was like, oh, I'm going to carry a spider out. I'm not going to kill it. I'm not going to harm a bug. I'm not, that was the level I was at. But am I harming myself in any way? Whether it's striving too much, wanting to be this way or that way, thinking I'm not this or I'm not that, or am I overeating, or am I not sleeping? Am I stressing out? So it included, I needed to reflect on ways that I wasn't harming myself. And then not taking what's not offered, that was okay for me. Waiting for it to be offered. I got to offer myself my own foods once I got home, so that was okay. But also that discipline of like, well, the cookies are right there. So still trying to stick to not eating afternoon or something like that. I got used to it. It was okay. Then came false speech. That was not so bad for me either. I'm usually trying to speak the truth, but it was around being. Is it time to tell the truth? Do you need to, can you tell the truth in a kind way? There's so much work around that. And then refraining from using substances that cloud the mind. There was my challenge. I started to think, okay, I didn't need to have wine or beer while I was on retreat. Of course, that's fine. But at home, with the social things, I like a glass of wine at home. So it's like, oh my goodness, so I can't drink wine. Somebody's inviting me out to dinner. Oh, I'm not drinking wine. Then I have to tell everybody, I'm not drinking wine. Well, why are you not drinking wine? You have to go into this long story. And then I started to think, well, why am I drinking wine? Because I feel when I'm, it makes me relax. Oh, I can't drink wine when I'm at home. Not at the retreat center anymore. And I started to get concerned because it wasn't just about using substances that cloud the mind. It was also about entertainment, television, maybe now like that clouds the mind too. There are other toxins, but this one was really talking about, alcohol and drugs. So I stretched myself around that one. It was hard. It's like New Year's is coming, Christmas is coming, my birthday's coming. Can I have a toast? Can I do this? And it was just a lot happening. But I refrained because I had taken these vows. And then the dancing and singing and music was really hard for me. I was a dancer. Oh my gosh, I love music. So television. I'm not a big TV fan, but I watch my things, my shows. And so I found that there could be some wiggle room I understood through the teachings around the television and this and this. Like, be mindful of it. What kind of shows are you watching? Are they violent? Are they this? Are they supporting you? Are they stirring up your mind? But there was no wiggle room around the alcohol. So I started to have a rub with these precepts. And then refraining from using luxurious high beds and stuff like, well, my bed was fine. It was not high and luxurious, so that wasn't a problem. But it's also about, am I sleeping too much? So I had another problem with that because I like to sleep. So I started to see how I didn't like how certain precepts were because of my habits. Why do I have to get up if I don't have to get up? Am I overindulging in sleep? But the point of it is, am I? Is it beneficial? Could I be doing something more beneficial to my life? Could I be practicing? Is my sleeping leading to enlightenment? I don't know. But, so that was a struggle for me too. Did I miss anything? Oh, I see, I skipped right over the abstinence and the celibacy, because that wasn't my issue. The issue was the alcohol and the not being able to listen to music or dance or things like that. But what I found out, I started to realize that if I could do it with mindfulness, if I could if I can mindfully choose the television shows I was going to watch and make sure I wasn't zoning out on 8 hours. And not that that was bad in itself, but that's not what I set up to practice for. I was setting these things up so that I could clear the mind, simplify my life, and go into some deep space. So it was really I learned that these trainings were to support me and my practice. And that was the intention. It wasn't about having to let go or give up. It was like, why do I want to cloud the mind with a glass of wine when I'm sitting in practice and I'm trying to understand how the mind works and touch into my true emotions, my true reactions, my true states of being? Can I really be fully present? So anyway, I did it for about 3 months, and then I realized it was really, I didn't have a lot of support, and my preceptor, Aya Ananda Bodhi, told me that that would be my challenge, that there's not a lot of support in the regular, in the lay life in your house. So it might be challenging. And so what I decided to do was I asked to be released from the precepts. However, I didn't want to completely let go because I was really benefiting from them. I really enjoyed the simplicity of my clothing. I really enjoyed, eating more mindfully, caring for beings, practicing wise speech. The food thing, well, I was okay letting that go. I prefer eating 3 meals a day and snacking, but I was also more mindful about how I ate and when I ate. And just thinking more considerately, like, considering how I watch TV or how I consume social media. So when I let go of the precepts, it was really because I felt that I had some rub around why certain precepts seemed to have flexibilities and other ones didn't, especially around that one around alcohol and then music and dancing. I just couldn't get it. So what I decided to do, I got released from the precepts and I decided that I would wear brown and do the 8 precepts whenever I went on retreat. And guess what happened? COVID-19 hit. I came out of the precepts like in December of 2019, and then boom, we were in the COVID era, and all this time I was like, I could have been doing it all along because there was nothing else to do but stay sheltered in place. But what I did, I let go of the formal precepts, and I decided to still continue to live in a modified way. I decided that I really liked the simplicity of my clothing, so ever since then, I've been dressing in black. I chose another color, just all black, because I felt that that was something where I wouldn't get too much attention. I forgot to tell you that on the Forest Refuge, when I had all that brown, people were bowing to me and thought I was a nun. And I was like, oh my God, oh my gosh, that's not what I want. So I've been dressing in black since then because that felt good to me. I also chose black because of all the people of Black African descent that were being murdered and killed and shot and all of that stuff. And I said, I'm in mourning until we can get justice for all those people. And I was still in mourning for my parents and sister who had died. And I was in black because of the richness of the color black and the Nile River, the soil, and the night sky with the stars. It was like trying to bring positivity back to blackness. And then I decided to rewrite that precept around alcohol because I said there's got to be a way that I can still enjoy my glasses of wine without causing harm to myself or others, because that's what it came down to. And so I rewrote it to say, I undertake the chances that lead to heedlessness and harm. So I limit myself. Which I had already done. It was like, okay, but this is what I'll do. I'll continue to practice. And I decided to go ahead. I had already taken the five mindfulness trainings with the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, where they were more modernized. And I had found flexibility around that. So now that is my practice. I'm not sure if I. So what I learned was these things, these precepts, the simplification, the renunciation is really supportive for practice. It really helped me think about how I was living, how I was consumed, how I was spending my time. And it cut out a lot of distractions so that I could focus on my practice, which was what I really wanted to do. And in the end, it simplifies most because I did let go of some things to have it less full, less busy with things that were unnecessary. And I love it. And I'm still, it's still a practice, it's still a training. But it's what I come back to. And so I guess I should stop there because I see I've talked for a long time, and I hope I was making sense, and I hope it there was some benefit to that, and I'm happy to open it up to discussion. If there are any questions or curiosities, maybe that would be that's probably a better way to go around because there's so much to say. So yeah, let's open it up. I'm gonna stop the recording for this part, and I thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening, for letting me share.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.